Hi, hello. Welcome back to Manja the Podcast. I am your host, Azul Flores, and today we're going to be talking about all things New York City and New York City-based artists. Here at Manja the Podcast, it is very important to us to share news and introduce to all of you out there new artists, small or local businesses that maybe you haven't heard of before. If you happen to follow us on our Instagram, @manja_nyc_official, we do a daily buongiorno post on our stories accompanied by a beautiful picture of New York City. And this is how we discovered today's guest, New York-based photographer known as the Beholding Eye on Instagram, Paul Sabert. So hi, thank you so much for being here with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I just wanted to tell you that, you know, that for Manja's Instagram, we started reposting pictures of New York City with buongiorno, like good morning, to start off our stories. And that's how we discovered your work. And it's just amazing because we loved it. Like, my boss was like, hey, check out this photographer. And I was like, oh, cool, we should repost every morning. And we were like, yeah, so that's how we discovered your work. I'm very excited to have you here.
Oh, nice. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay, to get started, for people who are not familiar with your work, can you tell us a little about who you are and what you do?
My name is Paul Sabert. I am a New York City area-based freelance photographer. I guess I'm more widely known for my cityscape aerial landscape photography. I do, however, cover a lot broader genres as well, but that's what the public eye sees for the most part. And I'm sure that's why I'm here. We're not here to talk about my wedding photography or my family my family photo shoot photography. But yeah, that's what I'm known for, and so that's why I'm here. I've been a photographer for about, about 10, 12 years. And so, I've been a photographer, full-time for about 6 years now, and into photography for, I would say probably about, 11, 12 years now. And I got into aerial photography in 2015. I was offered a free flight to go with a friend of mine. And I fell in love with it and did everything I could to find myself back in a seat again as soon as possible, and over and over and over again. And so 6 years later, here we are. And I'm about a year away from my first solo published book of aerial images of New York City. So
amazing.
Stay tuned. Oh yeah, spring of 2022. It was supposed to be this year, but COVID did a number last year on 2020. So things got pushed back, unfortunately, but it is what it is. Gives me another year to get better and get some fresher images in there. So Yeah.
But that's so exciting. Oh my God. I can't wait to see that book.
Thanks.
But yeah, I wanted to know, like, how did you find your own photography style at the beginning? And how do you, like, think, if you think of something specific when you edit your photos and when you're taking them?
Yeah. You know, finding a style, I think, it doesn't come in the beginning. You're seeing what other people are doing. You're seeing locations, you're learning. Your style is like, let me get it in focus. And then your style is, let me expose it correctly after I'm getting it in focus. I think style comes into play when there's a mastery of the, or I don't even want to say mastery, because that would assume that I feel like I've mastered something. I would say just an understanding of the fundamentals and how to make those photography fundamentals work for you. My style, I think, comes from seeing people that I admire and how they treat their images has given me thought and pause when I'm out in the field and saying, like, recognizing conditions from someone who I admire and saying, oh, so this might be how they first set up their image. Now let me try and do that. Now let me apply how I see the world through my eyes, right? So we are a culmination of the influences that we, pull in from people around us. And if we're not humble enough to understand that, then the evolution will be short for you. And the growth will be limited. I think, all of us need to understand that we are especially in this day and age, we're watching everything. We have access to everything at any time of day. So to think that we have an original idea, we may have an original take on someone else's original idea that may not even be original because they saw it done, you know, 80 years ago by Ansel Adams somewhere, you know? So it's a matter of letting the conditions present themselves to you and then relying on the skill that you have cultivated over the years through trial and error, through learning, that become a style, I think. Yeah.
Very true. And that actually goes to my other question, like, where do you get inspiration from your work? Are there any like photographers or artists in specific that you're influenced by?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. I think I'm influenced by people who do things that I don't do. And I'm influenced by people who do things better than me. So like, for instance, and then somehow thankfully they become friends, and then you get to, you know, pick their brain, just through conversation. But, you know, on Instagram, there's a gentleman from Toronto. His name is Mike. And he goes by Mind's Eye. He is just like, every picture that he produces makes you wish that you've never gone to the same place that he's gone to, because every image falls short. The way he sees things and the way that he can control his images in his through his editing process is really remarkable. It's always awe-inspiring. There's such an attention to detail. Another guy that I really, really love and is a good friend, and he sees things and he does things that are so outside the box, and he's able to create an entire genre just from his imagination. His name is Eric Hercules, he goes by Eric Hercules on Instagram. Absolutely amazing. Does a lot of levitation images where he throws something up in the air and he snaps it as there's nothing else around it, and they're like perfectly crisp and clean, and all his lines and angles are just incredible. So yeah, I think those two guys, on a daily basis, I can go to and see something to make me question how I'm going about doing what I'm doing, or try to assimilate that level of thought and care into what I'm doing.
Amazing. That is so creative, the way you like described when he throws things in the air, and just like, I've seen those types of photography and I think it's amazing. Like, how do people do that? It's just so talented.
Right.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. When you see those types of like pictures. But you actually, my next question is, like, most of your content, of course, on Instagram is aerial photography, which is incredible. And you said that it was 5 years ago that you went on a free ride and you took some pictures out. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? How did you like get into that?
Yeah. So, I guess we're talking almost 6 years now, where, through the community of Instagram, through just kind of meeting up casually with, friends, I met a gentleman who, it turned out was going to be doing, a magazine story about aerial photography. And that required two helicopters to be in the air at the same time, flying kind of in tandem. And that's called an air-to-air flight. And so he requested that I take pictures of him taking pictures of me, right? As I would be the subject, but he wanted some behind-the-scenes images of him taking the shots. And so, yeah, I really wasn't sure if this was going to be a good thing or not. You know, like, as I got older, you know, I lost that adventurous, non-queasy tummy that I experienced a couple of years beforehand. So I wasn't really sure how it was going to go. And once we took off and kind of like did like a quick hard turn, and my stomach was like all right. I just kind of, you know, locked in, and then it was time to go to work, you know? So it was fine, but that was my first experience was, you know, and, in the world of aerial photography, and aviation photography, there's a certain style that you don't necessarily want all the blades of the helicopter or the propellers to be frozen. You want to shoot slow enough so that you can see a little bit of rotation in there. So that's even trickier. And you're talking about two objects that are moving. So it was being able to do that, I attest to, and I'll always say this, and you can go back and check in any podcast or any talk I've ever been on, I attest that to my wedding photography and being an understanding light, understanding my camera and how to adjust my settings at the you know, drop of a hat to be able to acquire those settings in these kind of always changing light scenarios when you're moving around a subject, and sometimes you're shooting into the sun, sometimes you're not. So as much as sometimes you know, the cool kids will say wedding photography, you know, oh man, I hate wedding. I'm like, I don't know, it made me a better photographer. So I'm all about, if you find people that want to pay you to do a wedding while you're still up and coming, then take it and learn, and it'll make you a better photographer for sure.
Yeah, amazing. There's so many things that people don't really like think about, like what goes into it. There's a lot of work that goes into that, like what you described with the lighting and like the things that you don't want to like seem this way. And like, that's so interesting to me, because people just look at a picture. And, yeah, a picture. I'm like, no, there's so much.
Yeah, they're like, oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. People don't know what really goes into it. And it's so interesting to know that. Yeah, I also read that you offer private photography workshops. Can you share a little on what goes on or what you focus on the workshops?
Yeah, sure. So my private workshops really, I come from a family of teachers. In my past life, my degree is in music. So I've spent a better part of 15, 20 years while I was in school and afterwards teaching private saxophone lessons. So the teaching gene is in me, and that skill has been cultivated. I think my workshops really focus on making sure that whatever level that you're at, whatever level that you feel like you're at when you come to me, I'm always going to assess your understanding and grasp of the fundamentals of the relationship between ISO, shutter speed, and aperture, and how that pertains to how you're going about getting your images. And then we move on from there. There's a good amount of talking, but there's also, I usually like to leave an hour to like half the time at least for us to not only go over these subjects, and we talk about how important each one is, what each one controls, what the manipulation of these things, what that produces, and then we go and we apply it practically. Whether or not we're walking around and taking images. Some of the more advanced students will come in and we'll talk about composition. We'll talk about editing. We'll talk about, you know, flash photography, you know, how to work with filters, how, you know, what long exposure photography looks like. So there's a wide range, but I think I always start to make sure I'm not leapfrogging over what I deem is like the most important aspect of photography, is that the fundamentals, like we call it, you know, like the whatever you want to call it, the Holy Trinity, the big triangle, the big three of photography. If you don't understand that, you can't explain it to me by me just saying, explain this to me in with ease, then we're not going to go beyond that until I feel comfortable that you're, because that's going to make you a better photographer in the long run.
Yeah, I get that. I was like, oh man, I wish I could know what those things, I know what those things are kind of, because literally like during quarantine, I think some people, the majority of people can like understand or feel me, because like I was so bored and I was like, oh man, I had a camera and I was like, I want to learn. And I like looked up videos and I learned what aperture was, ISO. And I was like, what is this? What? I thought it was just take the picture, right, and like focus. It's like so much stuff that goes into it, and like the lighting, I was like, wait, okay, this lighting doesn't work, then I had to move.
Yeah, I mean, like if it's something that interests you, right, whether or not it boredom drives you to it or whatever, but it let you see that it's more than just kind of pointing and then clicking, you know, camera and a lens at something. So yeah, there is a level of finesse that has to be learned, and that only comes through time or kind of these shortcuts where you can take a workshop with somebody who has the ability to kind of, that's another ability to teach somebody, right? So it's, it's, I think any discipline, takes time. It's an investment of time and effort and,
time and practice. Yeah.
Real focus and intention.
Yeah. I just wanted to tell you that recently on your Instagram, just a couple of days ago, you posted about the new installation in Grand Central Station, the Da Vinci of Debt,
mm-hmm.
which is insane to think about how all those diplomas combined amount to a total of $470 million, which is crazy. I didn't know that. I read your caption. I was like, wow,
yeah.
Stunned.
Yeah.
Do you feel that it's important as a photographer to share pictures of other people's art through your platform?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I necessarily feel like it's important. I feel like if it's in line with something that, or something that strikes a nerve with me. Now, like I saw it and I thought it was visually stunning. And then I read the article surrounding it. And I was even more enamored with it. So I was more than happy. And given that, it was only there for a limited time. There was the draw of like, there's only a few people that aren't going to be working that can go and get this, right? And spread the word about it. So if I had the time, I might as well go down and spread the word, because I was lucky enough to not have to incur debt, but I have a bunch of friends that are, you know, their life right now is about living, within a certain set of means, just so that they can pay their rent and pay their student loans back. So it's a huge thing. I don't think I necessarily need to go into, you know, I feel like when there are things that are culturally significant, and they are also not polarizing, right? Because I think from all levels of socioeconomic status, people incur debt, whether by choice or by necessity. The fact that we in this country have this amount of debt that's out there, surrounding bettering ourselves, it's thought provoking, to say the least, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was just like, I saw this beautiful picture of this beautiful piece. And then when you read it, it's like there's so much more to it. And like, it was really interesting and just really insane, honestly, to know that fact. Thank you for that, though. Do you have any advice for like any person who maybe wants to start out with photography, but don't know how to, or like if they should invest in a good quality camera, like right off the bat? Because I hear that all the time, like, oh, I'm going to buy this insane camera, but I've never taken a picture in my life, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I do have feelings about that. I don't know. I think probably about a little bit more than a month ago, I did a series on my stories, asking people to see if they could tell the difference between, you know, this brand new camera and the generation before that camera, that I own both of them. And it was like just as I thought. It was about 50-50. People couldn't figure it out. And I did that for a number of pictures. And so I kind of did a little video of myself and I said, you know, okay, so what's the point, right? So why did I make you guess? And my point being, if you're just starting out, like there's no need, like if you're exploring whether or not you want to, be a photographer, let's figure out first and foremost, if it's something that you love. Right. Secondly, if it's something that you have an aptitude for, right, and you don't need to spend $5,000 to figure out whether or not this is something that you love or that you have an aptitude for. And my advice was buy the camera that is right for you and for your budget. Learn as much as you can, and then when you feel as though you are desiring more from your images, but you can't achieve that, with the current camera, then you know it's time for an upgrade. All right, then you can say, okay, well, I don't know if I'm still going to do that. I'm still an enthusiast. I still am just doing this on the weekends and I'm enjoying it, but I'm enjoying a little bit clearer images. Maybe I'll sell prints or maybe I'll do this, you know? But you don't need to start with a flagship model. These are tools, right? And an old hammer is still going to put in a nail in the wall, you know, as long as the handle is good, right? So you make sure that you have relatively good glass. You make sure that things are calibrated and correct. If you're buying a used camera, my first camera for many years was this little point-and-shoot Canon PowerShot. And then I upgraded to a full-frame camera, but it was a used full-frame camera. I didn't buy the newest and latest and greatest until it was a necessity. I needed speed. I needed more megapixels. I needed, you know, a second camera that was going to deliver images that were of a professional quality. Not to say that the first camera I had wasn't, but there was more out there that I could utilize. And I knew I had the tools and the skill at that point to be able to utilize all those things that the next camera afforded. So long story short, you don't need to buy brand new. Grow into your cameras, just like you grow into anything through life.
That's really good. Like, I know some people who need to hear that from an actual professional, you know, photographer. Because, you know, I was like in the beginning, like, I was like, oh, I don't have like a legit camera. I can't really like take good pictures. And that's not true. You know, even like with your phone, you can experiment and then, you know, yeah, learn to edit, just stuff like that, which is really interesting too. But yeah, and also like, have you ever done like food photography before? Like, how do you feel about it? And do you think it's like as hard as aerial photography? I don't know, considering like the skill it takes to actually like style and take a good picture of the food. Cause I thought it was also to like just take a picture of the food, but there's so much into it too, like the styling and like the position. And I don't know, do you have any experience with that?
Yeah, I have very little experience, but what I know of food photography is that there's so much detail that you want to make sure that however you're photographing the food, whatever your style is, that it is complementary and completely like you're putting yourself aside to showcase someone else's art, right? So first and foremost, like, it links in with the question that you were saying, do you feel like it's important to photograph other people's art and share it? Like, that's what someone is doing when they are a food photographer, right? You're talking about somebody who has, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but my wife and I, we love all the, you know, chef's table and, you know, the Top Chef, but like all these things that highlight chefs and like these premier chefs that are so connected with the earth and where the food comes from, and they're cultivating their own food and their own strains of vegetables, and the meat is you know, procured and humanely dispatched and organically raised, and then they're taking those ingredients and combining them with a knowledge of what's in season, what complements what. It is really like almost in comparison to a symphony, right? Where you have a composer who is hearing all these complementary instruments that are coming together to create a cohesive melody. Food photography is something that I've always wanted to do, but it's an intimidating, I think, step. Unless you find somebody who's very trusting and you're growing into that knowledge and understanding of lighting and how are you doing it? Are you doing it with natural light? Are you doing it with studio lighting? Is it a combination of both? You know, like you're saying, the styling, you know, if the food is colorful, then are you doing a monochromatic palette in the background? Are the plates of black and white? Is it gray? Is it this or that? Like, so there's so much to think about. And then you're thinking about the framing of it and how the light comes into play and how that plays with the food itself. So there's so much to that goes into, I think, yeah, again, photographing someone else's art, that it's it is intimidating. If you're going into it correctly, you should be intimidated, especially if it's like a chef, like where you have to be like, yes, chef, you know what I mean? Like, so I think that's probably one of the more intimidating, outside of weddings, where I feel like every wedding you shoot is someone's Super Bowl Sunday. It's someone's championship game. Like, and if you screw up, like, it's going to be a reputation harmer, you know? So if someone's paying you to capture their art, then you better be spot on your game for sure.
Also something that people don't think about, even myself, like, it's just like, oh yeah, this gig or to take pictures and that's, no, it's a real, you know, it's a lot of, it's a big deal,
right, yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially how I feel like, the last 15, 20 years, everything has become so, like, there's a niche for everything. Like, we're the best burger place, we're the best milkshake place, we're the best cookie place, we're the, you know, and then you go into fine dining, right? Where it's, we're the best fine dining vegan, we're the best fine, you know, like, and on and on and on, right? It's, you can be a top of a niche that someone is ignorant to and go in and not approach it with enough humility that you're not paying the amount of respect. Like, okay, it's a burger joint, but this dude is the best guy. Like, he is known as the king of burgers or whatever you want to call it, right? If you go in and you're like, ah, I'm just going to take a picture of a couple of cheeseburgers, and like, you don't give it the same deference as you would someone who's at the top of their game and, you know, the number one restaurant in the world, people are going to see that and it'll reflect poorly on you. So, I mean, that's that all of that comes into play, you know, when you ask me, you know, do I have any advice for people who are starting out or want to become a photographer? Some big advice that I would give, and I know I'm like hopping around, but just our conversation is inspiring me to readdress something. Something that people don't understand is that when you accept money to do something like photography, you are moving from the realm of an artist into the realm of a service provider, all right? And if you don't understand that there's a certain amount of people skill involved, there's a certain amount of how do I deal with the difficult situation, it's not all about you. Someone is paying you because you have a skill. It doesn't necessarily mean that someone is paying you because they want what they're looking for to look like your pictures and how they look on Instagram. There has to be a departure of and a quelling of your own ego to be able to see and hear their vision and how you can apply your skill and your understanding to help them attain what they're looking for. So it isn't just kind of like, oh, I'm, you know, they approached me because I have, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 followers on Instagram, and this is how I'm going to go into it. And they're like, yeah, it's not really what I look for. I was looking for more along these lines. Like, the service provider in you, you will learn to ask, what is your vision beforehand? What is your budget beforehand? And so that you're all on the same page of what's expected. But that's up to you. So dealing with people is a huge part of the game. So if you're not a people person and you want to accept money from people to do work, learn how to be a people person or have a good poker face. You know what I mean? Other than that, have a good poker face.
That is very interesting. True. When you said like there's a difference between like when you're an artist and then when you start like providing a service, you're providing a service. So it's very different. But thank you. That's all I have for today. But thank you so much for everything. I loved it. Very interesting.
Awesome.
So thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thanks for having me. Good luck. I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to another episode of Manja the Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and please go follow us on our socials. On Instagram, we're @manja_nyc_official, just so you do not miss any other announcement of when another episode is coming soon. Catch you on the next episode.